Let the spirit of the Kennedys
and the magic of the Disney brothers be with you always.
Blood and Business Legacy merch, available now.
Let's run faster,
work harder,
burn brighter
before we're gone.
Order your Blood and Business Legacy merch today.
Hughes.
Okay, right off the bat, we are going strong. I was going to say, huge announcement.
Oh, I thought you were literally about to talk about Hugh watching us.
We need to talk about the Kennedy siblings. Welcome to Blood and Business.
I'm Bethany.
And I'm Cassie.
First of all, I guess we're back.
So excited to be back.
And
so
excited
to be sitting here recording a freaking episode.
The huge announcement I was talking about is that we are now.
Oh, I was like, what? Where is she going with this?
In Technicolor on YouTube. And we have not had KFM video ever thus far. And before, our main episodes were called home videos and we only put them on Patreon, but they are now available to all on YouTube.
And
they
actually,
are so good.
Fun fact, we do have video footage of KFM 1 and 2 because those were supposed to be a part of the main episodes. And we didn't decide until
after recording them that we wanted to separate our just like chitty chat discussions,
we had so much
opinions. Yeah. We didn't. That's the thing. We didn't freaking know how much we were going to talk about the Kennedys.
There's just too much conspiracy and controversy to ignore.
I'm saying this to say that we're in a new set. It's so freaking beautiful. We took all the books that we own in the entire world, filled our bookcases, returned from season one, our comfy chairs. We full on just went for the aesthetics and the vibe.
We're loving it.
Yes. But if you hear dogs walking around, that's why. Okay. So we freaking have been through it. We've tried to freaking record this thing like 8 times. We even tried to do like, oh, let's do, what if we're like more organized? What if we pull we're not creatives like doing this.
We're freaking haphazardly. We need systems.
Yeah. So we're
planning.
Like, let's have a KFM meeting before we record the KFMs,
get
our notes together.
It'll help us with the editing process.
Worst idea we've ever had.
Worst idea. Completely kills the creative, fun, spontaneous conversation.
No, actually, it was that.
While we were in the meeting, and we were like,
for just us,
Cassie's
so excited.
I mean, we were so excited during the meeting that we came up with this whole freaking, what is it like, analogy for the different acts of the Kennedys. I tell Cassie, oh my gosh, act one is so Folklore Evermore vibes because we were saying how act one feels so like gray, sepia. And then act two is like full color.
But coming back with a freaking vengeance. So it's
Reputation.
Reputation vibes.
So then we go on this full rabbit trail.
We're like, oh my gosh, episode 10 is Are You Ready For It? Opening
track.
Because
we're playing Taylor Swift during the reading. Because we start talking about this and Cassie's like, oh my God, we need the freaking vibes. So she goes over to her big computer and she's like blasting Taylor Swift music. And then she's like, shut up, Bethany, listen to these lyrics. This is so
Jack. It's freaking JFK.
It's literally
like every word.
Listen to the lyrics.
So then I pick out like everyone's track off of Reputation.
I'm like, of the siblings.
This
the
is Pat. This is Bobby.
Oh my gosh, this is crazy. This is Kick.
And
we think it's such a fun little bit that we're going to do for the actual recording of the campaign.
We were campaign. So happy.
So we sit down to record it and we're like, act one
is like a Taylor Swift album.
It was
it's like
so
folklore.
Bad.
Why is it like folklore? It's like a photo
gray
album.
Grayscale, like sepia.
It was so sad.
Trash.
We literally used all of our energy, it's like whenever you're coming up with a new idea and it's like hitting you, it's like so exciting.
It's,
it's the novelty of it.
Yeah.
And then you try to recreate
it. It's like retelling
it.
A freaking joke. You just had to be there.
You
it's like
had
so
to
not
be
funny
there.
The second time. So we're not doing that anymore. Trash it and we're refilming and not going to be reading our notes.
And we recorded. So this is just going to be a behind the scenes saga of where we've been. We recorded episode 10, like and a half months ago.
If not longer ago. Oh my gosh. That was way before Kick.
We were not going to cover Kick. I wasn't going to do it.
Oh, and why, might you ask? Because Kathy has some personal vendetta against Kick. Before she even really knew her story, she was just like, this chick was so
well, because
selfish.
It's just, no, and it wasn't just that. It's just, it's a snooze fest for me. Give me all the Americana. Like, I will devour all of it. Freaking
British culture. She's
posh.
Like, tea and
the crown.
Trumpets.
Like, yeah, no. So I was like, this is not interesting. She's a freaking debutante. Who cares?
But it was so interesting.
It
and
was.
So anyways, my case for Kick was Cassie. She was Jack's favorite sister.
Yep.
You have to cover her.
She got me on that.
Why was she his favorite?
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I'm glad we freaking covered
and
her.
And so we covered her. And I'm glad we did as well. Her story was very dramatic. There was a lot more there than I thought. But we recorded episode 10 before episode 7, 8, and 9 were even written. So that was a long time ago.
But I'm so glad that we did that and we took the time. And everyone gave such good feedback because we were also like, I wanted to do her before we get into the presidency because obviously in episode 10, she's still alive technically.
Right.
But
yeah, it just made
so much more sense.
Go
into act one because those are the three siblings that you lose as young adults.
And that's the era. It's like an era of loss.
Yes. And they're all in their 20s. And it just made more sense to have like a clear. And that's also why it felt like Folklore Evermore vibes, because it's like such
a downer. Mourning. And then also, I'm glad that you made me cover Kick because she is the reason that JFK kind of switched into JFK. A lot of it had to do with losing Joe Jr., but a lot of it had to do with losing Kick as well.
And it was also perfect timing because I think the shift in the family dynamic after losing Kick was even more severe than it was after Joe Jr. passed and Rosemary disappeared because of everything kind of happening time-wise with the war and everything. And I think Joe Jr. obviously was a little, not like expected, but it wasn't as
out of the blue
as Kick's death was. Plus, on top of that, like, they already lost two other siblings. So the third time,
just
it was
don't
just
expect
like, what
that. Yeah.
is even going on in our family? Who are we? That was like the final breaking point where they all decided to come together and rebuild. Because I feel like in between Joe Jr. and Kick dying, they were sort of scattered still. Like, Kick was in England. Joe Jr. just passed. Rosemary was on a farm in Massachusetts or whatever.
Yeah, that nobody knew.
Nobody knew where she was.
Yeah.
Bobby and Eunice were in school. And the younger ones were obviously still at home with Rose.
Jack was like just starting his political career and kind of traveling all over the place. He went on international trips to learn and he...
But presidency was like obviously nowhere near.
No, he was...
In his path.
Running for the House of Representatives.
So everyone's super scattered and then Kick dies and that's when I feel like Jack decides for the entire family, okay, we're doing this. I'm going to go for the presidency. And so with all of that being said, Act One is now over. As Jack would say, it has come time to write the obituary of the British Empire. We're saying goodbye and we are stepping into the freaking Americana 1960s.
The JFK and Jackie and Bobby and Eunice that we all know and love so well.
This is the true Kennedy era.
This is the rumors, the freaking legends,
the Hollywood,
the lore that you've heard about your entire life. It really did feel like in Act One, the Kennedys were this bright family with all this promise and potential and so much excitement, innocence, and just hope and potential.
Hope
in their eyes.
They were so full of hope.
And they lost a lot of that innocence, a lot of that naivety of like what life could really be like.
Mm-hmm. They were almost like this, you know how people say when you're a teenager, you feel infinite or you feel
invincible.
Invincible. Thank you. That's the word.
Mm-hmm.
You have that mentality.
And the Kennedys never really lost that, but it's in a different tone now. It's a different light.
I wouldn't say it would. I feel like it switched from, like, bring it on.
We
got this. Watch us have our cake and eat it, too. To what else do I have to lose? Take whatever you freaking want from us.
Yeah.
We're going to keep freaking going.
Their actions didn't change, but their...
They're like fight and grit and determination.
Perspective did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because
Jack went out there on top of the freaking world in Act 1.
Right. And then Jack went out there, obviously, at the end of Act 2, knowing what could have happened. Mm-hmm. And then Bobby went out there knowing very well what could happen. So it's not that they slowed down, but it's definitely that they had a different attitude and a different perspective. Mm-hmm. So all we're saying is hold on to your freaking seatbelts. We're literally climbing up the roller coaster.
Yeah, I think that we should point out too that the risk taking never stopped, but people like discredit them, how much they were willing to lose.
You're right, because it's not out of ignorance.
No.
It's out of willingness. They didn't believe that
they were in it. Yeah, they just felt like
it was worth it.
Dude, if we're going to die anyways, let's freaking die trying.
Yeah, or die doing it.
Yeah.
Freaking Jack did affect a lot. And so did Bobby. And so did Eunice. Eunice
freaking died doing it too.
Kick.
Well, and I feel like she was on the right track too with Billy. Well,
should we rewind? Or should we just not? We should just leave Kick.
Yeah, I'll leave Kick in the dust.
Okay.
But she's going to linger in my mind. Forever. I want to be forever young. Oh my God, why am I going to be sad now? So with episode 10, I feel like we're just starting to rebuild the family dynamic because there were so many pieces that got left behind with Act 1. And Jack is re-figuring out who he is, his identity, his role, what he wants to do with his life. Is he going to try and attempt to fill Joe Jr.'s shoes, or is he going to completely go on a separate path?
Yeah, and he straddled that decision for a minute.
Yeah, I feel like
it's a lot of responsibility.
Yeah, and in the future, you'll see. But I feel like part of the reason why he didn't fully commit to the presidency until very last minute was because it was that whole, am I going to live the life that my brother isn't going to live? Am I going to contribute what my brother couldn't? Or am I going to, is that like kind of stealing, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I just felt, there's just lots of layers.
Yeah, it was just, weird. Yeah, exactly. Lots of layers in a super complex nuanced situation. Mm-hmm. But in episode 10, we get to see that shift in Jack, him starting to decide and taking a couple steps forward in his political career and him sort of testing out the waters, I think, and I feel like at the beginning it was a little bit of a mask and he's faking it until he makes it, because if you listen to the quotes of people talking about him and his personality from his friends, his family members, about what he was like before Joe and Kick died, he was a lot less outgoing, a lot less charismatic in a like very loud way. And he was more so a reader, a writer. People thought that he was going to go on to be a teacher or a writer.
I mean, he had to literally go against his natural personality and change himself little by little. I mean, people called him out on like, dude, your clothes are rumpled, you're late, your speech is terrible. Like, you have great ideas, but the delivery, I mean, that is more of like a creative person.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to...
A creative become, and kind of like an intellectual, like they're
yes,
just like odd. They're not,
and you had to like become kind of a like performer Enneagram 3 that he was not, that correct. He didn't even freaking care to be
correct.
But it was important to him, I think, to actually bring to fruition all of the things that his dad and his
grandparents
worked so freaking hard for, dedicated their entire lives, moved from Ireland. I mean, he definitely had perspective on like his Irish important. Ancestors yeah. and like how much they sacrificed leaving their home.
Yeah, the weight of that was not lost on him.
Yeah. Lost on Kick, but you know, that's a different story.
So you see the shift in Jack first, and then it's almost like he decides for himself, but also for the entire family, because as soon as he gives like the green light or the go ahead,
oh yeah, everyone's waiting for him.
Getting yeah behind him, they start changing their entire lives to back Jack. And Joe Jr. or Joe Senior, you see him change as well because he had lost himself a little bit and lost that hope, that energy and that excitement for the future of his kids because he had freaking lost his two favorites and the people
his high performers.
Yeah, that the people that his hopes and dreams were sort of built around. So then Jack surprises all of them. And I think Eunice and Bobby were expecting it probably more so than the rest of them.
And Joe Sr. was begging him, but wasn't at all expecting it or confident. He was just like, I'm going to shoot my shot.
Yeah, like, please, will you try?
Yeah.
But was still so surprised at the person that Jack was and who he was becoming. So you're starting to see that shift in that new path that the family's going down. And the sisters that are left are completely backing Joe Sr. and Jack's plan. And I think that Jack was pouring himself more into his career than ever before as well as a way of coping because he was so distracted and like such an Enneagram 7 prior and still was just like kind of goofing off. And
do Enneagram 7s go to a 4 in anything? In stress or health?
No, I think they go to a 1 in stress because I go to a 7 in health.
Okay, yeah. And then you go to a 4.
I don't know what the other one is.
But what would they go to? I wonder.
The other thing has to go to them.
Okay, we'll look it up. Okay. Well, yeah, it's not me. Oh, a 5. Then. Yeah. It's a 5.
In what?
Whoa.
In health? Which makes freaking sense because if he was super unhealthy because his freaking siblings are gone and he like has
give
no
me that.
Idea what's happening.
I have to look it up.
So he, normally a writer and a freaking professor,
yeah,
what he was going
would
to
be a 5.
Would be a 5. And then all of this trauma happens and he starts going towards his 1 and advocacy and like just going out and screaming at people.
But they go to a 5 in growth.
Yeah, that's
they
what
go
I'm
to
saying.
A 1 in stress. Okay, yes.
Literally what I just said.
You know what? I was looking it
blacking
up, so I
out.
Couldn't listen to you because I was looking for the same information.
So Eunice?
So he said?
Yeah, so Eunice, Pat, and Jean are all completely behind this new family mission. That's really not a new family mission. That's
and like Rose.
The OG family mission. Yeah, and Rose as well.
The opening
Rose,
to episode 12
I
is
feel like
so
has come
cool.
alive with this new era.
Yeah.
She was like a little tired and haggard and over raising children. A little bit. She's like, I feel like excited that her kids are adults now.
Oh, yeah. Yes, she does like seem like an adult mom.
Yes, she is thriving because she was the one who like wanted them to be.
Yeah, she. Okay, I do want to mention this. We've got to do a mini-sode on Rose's secret stories because there are a lot of stories from women who Rose Kennedy just picked up on the side of the freaking road in Manhattan.
Oh, yeah.
Saw them cry, like literally saw a woman crying, told her to get in her taxi, took her to freaking the Waldorf for lunch or something like that, and said, you're going to be fine. You've got this. And you know how Jack feels an emotional, kind of a neglect?
Yeah, lacking from Rose.
From Rose.
Sure.
Well, a lot of people say that, you know, she had the perspective that when she would leave and go on these trips, it crushed her. And she would literally walk away with Jack saying either, come back, mom, come back. Or mean things like, okay, great, you're going to go freaking leave your kid. That's wonderful. I'm so thankful for you as my mother. You're going to freaking leave me again. And she would walk away with a together face and then get with it with like out of eye shot or whatever. What is it called? Out of
view.
View.
I don't know.
Earshot. View and just like start crying, just bawling because she felt that it was more beneficial to his growth as an individual and as a person, Jack the person, that she leave and that he be independent, that he build himself up and get tough and be okay on his own and be able to make his own decisions, etc. So we've got a cover Rose on Patreon. I know we like need to leave the parents on the podcast. We need to like move on because Blood and Business is not parents in business. But
boy, are they freaking interesting.
So interesting. And I feel that there's this hidden part of Rose that we do get glimpses of in episode 11 and 12 that are very interesting with Rose. Okay, so because we are at a super transitional moment and it's been a minute, we are going to do a really quick rundown of each family member, what they've been up to, what we've kind of learned about them so far, and then where they're at now, just to kind of make sure
we're all on the same page. There's yeah. so many freaking Kennedys, and then we've obviously lost several Kennedys, mm-hmm. and I am not sure how well people are like keeping all of the siblings
names
straight.
And all that. Yeah.
So we want to just like run down really fast, rapid fire profiles of the Kennedy family members.
So
that are left.
A number one, we have Joe Sr., the dad, the one who started it all. He, at the beginning of our story, was kind of charting his own territory. He was focused on his own career. He was focused on making money to make all of this possible. He had that goal to be like a millionaire by the time he was 35. And then after he had accomplished all of this on his own, he became ambassador to England and started to make a name for himself. He also started to realize that he himself was not going to be able to be president. He was a little bit too radical in his pacifist views. He had too big of a reputation. So then he shifted his focus to his kids. So then Joe Jr. was his prospect, and he was kind of, he switched himself to being the support role.
Joe Sr. is also a massive serial cheater. And the reason that the Kennedy boys were the way that they were, he set the family tone.
And the way that Kick was.
And the way that Pat is. So really just. There's also the quote that's going to come up in Chappaquiddick that I think sums up literally Joe Sr.'s mantra.
Oh my gosh.
As a parent. So anyways, a main character, but also a side character in the Kennedy sibling story.
A hero and also a supervillain. Whenever Joe Jr. died, he became very depressed. He was very affected by that. But then when Kick died, he went from being depressed and upset to being completely hopeless. And so that is why Jack kind of emerging and taking on this personality and this role that he didn't expect from him is like a brand new lease on life. It's a second chance. So Rose, our maternal figure, shut down her kind of motherly emotions that she even had. A lot of those she didn't even allow herself at the beginning. But now, after losing her oldest son and her oldest daughter, really just kind of shut herself down, separated herself. So now she also, with Jack's newfound career, is like, you know what? I'm slipping back into my freaking sparkly heels, and I am the mayor's daughter, the ambassador's wife. This role feels so familiar for her.
It's honestly wild how much Rose does come alive in this new act, this new chapter of their lives. She was built for this like campaign life, and you'll see a lot more of her in this role that just literally does seem like she was made for. And if you remember back to episodes 1 and 2, she talked about how sad she was about giving up that part of her life. And you can even see it when she marries Joe. I don't know if they just like set her up for failure. I feel like I've seen this several times in people's lives. But how they're like loved for doing something or being something, this role. And then they move on from that either through maturity or different phases of life. And they miss how they were viewed or what they were praised for in the past. So
I do think that was a huge part of her identity, who she was.
Who she was. And people stopped adoring her because now she was just a mom. She was just a wife. She didn't have this role. And so you see her step back into that with Jack and his career.
And she eats it up.
Oh my gosh. She starts going on TV shows, hosting things.
Well, because losing that part of herself is part of why she ended up going on all those trips.
Yes, and I forgot about that too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think there was lots of reasons for that, but that is kind of what instigated, okay, I need to get out of here.
Yeah, she did something of her own.
Yeah.
And she starts to get this again, which a lot of it was obviously like self-inflicted, self-imposed restraints on her own life. But I do think it is just, we give so much credit to Joe Jr. and Honey Fitz, but holy cow, Rose also had those genes that just thrived and was so charismatic,
political,
energetic, just literally shaking hands, kissing babies, whatever that political saying is.
Rhetoric
that was Rose.
Was her language. Obviously, if you remember from the episodes, Joe Jr. was the oldest son. He was the most athletic. He was the all-around boy, very intelligent, very charismatic, not like Jack.
A little bit more stoic than Jack was.
Yeah.
But still had that leadership, and people wanted to follow him. People admired him. But it was more so that the like adults admired and thought the world of Joe, and peers loved Jack because Jack was just fun.
Exactly. I was going to say, I would characterize Joe Jr. as the champion or the hero. Exactly.
For sure.
And Jack would have been more the magician, the jester.
Yeah.
Like,
just
he
like the fun.
Was the pal.
Mm-hmm.
Just somebody that you wanted to hang out with.
You wanted,
and that you were mesmerized around. Joe Jr., it was more of an obvious, like, of course you're a teacher's pet because look at you. You're the quintessential impressive person.
Yeah.
Jack, it was like, what is it about you that I just can't stay away from?
It was a little bit more mysterious for sure. But I think also a huge part of Joe Jr. was his role as Big Brother. And that was a lot of his identity. And if you go back and watch the home videos from episode, I would say 5 and 6, you see a lot of that side of him.
Yeah.
And he almost sacrifices his personal life in order to fulfill that role as the eldest son and the oldest Big Brother. And he was so caring, like such a caretaker to the little ones, and really did.
He was the hero.
He was the hero. Yeah.
So obviously then there's Jack. He's the second born of all 9 Kennedy siblings, and he is always in Joe Jr.'s shadow until there is no shadow, and then he's fully exposed. So he has to reinvent himself, reinvent his identity, and now there is no shadow to hide in. It is full spotlight. He is up to bat, and he has to freaking perform. He has to there's just nowhere to hide anymore. So
there's nowhere to hide. He's fully exposed, but there is so much decision and so much choice for Jack that it wasn't totally expected.
I mean, he got to choose who he would be, but whatever it was people were watching.
Yeah.
People were.
He was no longer able to hide behind Joe Jr. for sure.
And then Rosemary obviously is the third born. She is the first and eldest girl and the eldest sister. At this point, I believe she is at Craig House, but she will be transitioning to Wisconsin, to her home with the sisters there very soon.
Yeah, that's where she lives out the rest of her life. But coming up really soon is when, if you remember from episodes 3 and 4, Jack finally goes and visits at Joe Sr.'s suggestion. That influences his political career and a lot of the money, manpower, time that he spends during his short time as president is because of Rosemary. So she is in the background at this point and kind of left behind in Act One, but also casts a large shadow or influences a lot of what happens here in Act Two.
And they all do. And that brings us to another one, which was the fourth sibling, which was Kik, which obviously we just lost her in episode 9. But her legacy is similar to Rosemary's in that her legacy was her influence and her effect on Jack and who he was as a person, his emotions, his identity, what mattered to him, and how he saw the world, which the way that you see yourself and the way that you see the world is almost everything. So that was huge because both Rosemary and Kik very, very much impacted how Jack saw himself and the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is one of the reasons I love dissecting family dynamics and sibling relationships, because we aren't individual people just like so isolated on this earth. We have such a big impact and we influence people in ways that we would never guess. And our vulnerability and our relationships with others can change the freaking world. So
absolutely.
I just love how evident and prevalent that is in the Kennedy sibling story.
I was about to say, a sibling story. What a sibling story. So then we have fifth in line, Miss Eunice Kennedy Shriver.
Which is a perfect transition because she changed the world because of her siblings.
Absolutely. She was a ball of fire. Remember, she started the Special Olympics. She freaking told Jack, I thought you were going to forget your speech. Like, come on. She was
the biggest cheerleader and also like the loudest mouth.
Right. Just. But here in the like present time in episode 10, she is a bit more aimless. So she's got all of this freaking built up energy and she's going to figure out where she's going to put it. Mm-hmm. Then we have Pat, which is number 6 in the sibling order. And Pat is our new kick.
Oh, no.
She's not. But is
a Hollywood American version. Yeah, she is. No, actually.
Literally, there is a revelation in episode 12 that is too much like Kick. It is so eerie and so creepy. So be listening for that. Keep your ears perked because it's weird. It's a little bit like the Abraham Lincoln Kennedy mm-hmm. lineup. And then Bobby. Little boy Blue.
Baby Bobby. I just love him. People have tried to convince me not to love him, and I just won't have it. I just love Bobby so much. I relate to him a lot, I feel like, because he is that, I don't know, fighter and sort of making all of the moves behind the scenes, but very rarely gets the credit for it. And that runt that just like
and is fine with
freaking,
that.
And is so fine with it. He prefers it that way. He wants to be the bad guy because he just wants to freaking do.
Get it done.
Yeah, he just wants to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Joe Jr. was way more concerned about image. So was Joe Sr. Jack is a lot more interested in like how it feels for him, how much fun he's having, who he's going to hang out with.
Experience of it all.
Absolutely. Which would entail the image and the things that come with that. Bobby,
does not care. Doesn't even care what Joe Sr. thinks. He is just out there guns a-blazing. The only one that I think truly is fine with his dad thinking the worst of him and like threatening to cut him off.
Which gives him all the power. Doesn't care about what people think about him. Pay attention to Bobby because he becomes the freaking motor, the propeller, and just the vessel in which everything that the Kennedys do from here on out is possible. So, I mean, snaps for Bobby.
Snaps for freaking Bobby and still has time to have 11 children and a beautiful marriage. So,
absolutely.
How does he do it?
And we will definitely be getting to know Bobby more. Don't worry. Don't fret. Don't sweat. We are going to
give him
talk lots about Bobby.
Yes.
Okay. Next is Jean. She is the second to the baby, but she is the baby of the sisters. Mm-hmm. The youngest girl. She is the girl who used to pick up the forgotten towels and now she is doing the forgotten task on mm-hmm. the campaign trail. So she always was who she was.
Yep. She plays her role well.
And she is very, very just quiet and responsible and a contributor and
a people pleaser. Definitely mm-hmm. Looks up to her older sisters a lot. I think more than any of the other siblings. She was looking up to Kick mm-hmm. a ton. And that was like her role model. That was her Joe Jr.
Yep.
And wanted to be like Kick.
Remember, she copied Kick with the volunteering for the Red Cross and like making
scarves, I think.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
For soldiers.
Everything that Kick was doing, she wanted to be a part of. Mm-hmm. And after she loses Kick, she has to redirect that towards Pat and Eunice. And you will see in photos that she, I mean, is like down to the shirts and the skirts, is like matching her older sisters in every photo.
I love it.
Just like wants to be there and be a mm-hmm. part of it, but doesn't need the limelight like Pat.
Yeah.
And like Eunice's personality just demands because she's so
loud. Yeah. Jean is a lot more soft than either of them. Mm-hmm. And last, but absolutely not the least, and will not be the least talked about character in our story, he will have his moment, is the baby, Teddy. He is still trying to keep up on his chubby little legs. He's still not like fully grown into himself. His adult siblings are like not leaving him behind like they did with Rosemary, but definitely
dragging him along for the ride.
His family is forcing him into a role that like he is definitely not prepared for and not sure that he wants.
I feel like they just forget how old he is how young he is and how inexperienced he is. But we will also be talking about the different dynamic that Jean and Teddy kind of mm-hmm. grew up with as opposed to the older kids, because all of the younger kids are now going to get their moment.
Absolutely.
With Jack.
So Jean is kind of able to play that kind of copycat background supporting role. She is the understudy, basically, of the girls. But because Teddy is a boy, he doesn't get to do that. So he's basically shoved out on a tightrope.
And I think he wanted to do that, mind you.
Yes, agree. He did not want the limelight. He did not want a powerful role. Mm-hmm. He literally would want to be a supporting actor, but he could not be because he was a Kennedy man. And so he's literally shoved out on a freaking tightrope, basically. And everyone else is like doing their amazing because they all learned how to freaking walk on a tightrope. And Teddy just learned how to walk. And he's like,
what the crud am I doing here?
Yeah. Deer in headlights.
Yeah. He not only doesn't know how to do it, he also doesn't want to do it. Or is very unsure if he would ever want to do it. And it just obviously is a disaster for a minute. But it does story
absolutely
crumble down on him.
Falling down. Mm-hmm. But we'll talk about that later. So that's where everyone is. Teddy is going to be involved in all the politics. I don't know. I think you said that with Gene and everybody's involved.
Everyone is involved.
It's a family affair, so.
It is a family effort to get Jack Kennedy to the presidency. But I'm so excited to sort of move on with this new family dynamic and these new siblings because we didn't get to talk a lot about them because the older siblings were doing so much, literally all over the place, doing all the things. And now Jack has to move on from his Rat Pack OG sibling
from Brookline.
Yeah. And move on to these younger siblings. But I think it's so cool that he does choose to lean into that, because I think with his personality, who he is, it would have been easy for him to
just go MIA, get new friends, or
and just go party hard and become the next Gatsby. And he didn't. He decided to lean into the family and into, like Cassie said,
purpose,
into what his ancestors laid out for him, basically. Yeah. And doing that, he creates such huge bonds with his younger siblings and starts impacting them in incredible ways, and they impact him in incredible ways. So it's just really cool to start seeing these new relationships form.
It is so cool. And it's also really, really cool to see Jack, who was more of a shadow outsider character. He hasn't been the focal point or the focus of the family thus far, but he literally becomes like the center of the wheel, and like all the spokes of everybody else goes out from Jack.
Yes, which is wild, because having the knowledge that he is the president, we can't really
that makes sense to us.
Yes.
Yeah.
But this whole time he wasn't Rosemary, so he didn't need the time and attention. He wasn't Kick, so he wasn't just like gathering all the men and like showing off and had all the potential in the world. And
she was the it girl.
Nobody understood it, but they all worshipped it.
They all agreed.
Yeah. And he wasn't Joe Jr., which was the eldest, the golden boy, the one that everyone's hopes and dreams were hung on. So he was in the background this whole time. And he's finally having to step into the limelight, become a new person. And like Cassie said, carve away at himself day after day with his younger siblings.
And shows that you can freaking do that. You can change decide who you are. You can just say, I'm not cut out for this, but I'm freaking going to do it. And obviously, yes, we understand that the Kennedys privilege have
the money,
the network, power, the freaking everything. But
on a smaller scale, you can still freaking do the same thing.
Absolutely.
He could have decided. There are so many decisions in life, pivotal points where we decide who we're going to be. And
the day after day part,
the mundane,
huge, exponential. And I think we've said this before, but Tony Robbins said this, and I've always remembered it. He said, people grossly, grossly overestimate what they can get done in a year. But don't get discouraged and keep your eye on the prize, because people also grossly underestimate what they can get done in a decade or two or three. And if you're Jack, four.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And sometimes it takes a getting knocked down and life forcing you to pause and reevaluate, and you come to a point where you have to make a decision, and keeping your eyes peeled for those moments and taking the freaking reins and deciding for yourself instead of letting life happen to you, letting things decide for you, is so crucial because we all have moments where we're like, holy crap, my life is not at all what I thought it was
going to
be. It
shakes your shoulders and wakes you up.
And you get knocked down, but you get to decide when you get back up who you're going to be, what path you're going to take. And sometimes you do want to reinvent yourself, and sometimes life reinvents you for yourself. And then you have to decide how you're going to carry on with that new personality and that new perspective, that new outlook. But I think that this is such a good reminder that we all have those freaking decisions.
Yeah, we do.
Here I am on my freaking Enneagram 1.
But it's so crucial here with Jack, because Bethany mentioned this while we were having our freaking KFM meeting, that maybe if Joe Jr. hadn't have passed and if Kick hadn't have passed, maybe Jack would have chosen to be basically a man Kick, like a masculine version of Kick, just that Enneagram 7, very self-serving, out for fun, and that's it. And what a freaking loss, what the world would have missed out on. And we'll talk about what the world would have missed out on.
Yeah.
But that kind of blew my mind, because had it not been for the hardships, had it not been for the obstacles, so count it all joy. The other thing that Bethany mentioned with the difference between Kick's experience and Jack's experience, maybe another thing that was a hardship and an obstacle and something that was not comfortable for Jack, but that pushed him to kind of excel, was Joe Jr.'s shadow that he was living in. That Kick, her whole life had been told, you're amazing. Like, there's nothing that you can do to be better. You are incredible the way that you are. You belong in every room. We talked about this in episode 7. She literally believed that she belonged in every room that she walked in because she had been told that she did her whole entire life, and that there was nothing else to achieve. There was nothing to reach for. And Jack was not told that. He was not given the red carpet experience. And it wasn't all so uncomfortable. Like, a lot of it was uncomfortable, and that is something that I have to freaking wrap my head around like weekly, is, okay, I want to be better. I do want this. I do want the discomfort. I'm fine. I want to step up to the plate.
In order to have growth, and grow. You have to have discomfort, and you have to
be pushed. I mean, yeah, if humans are left to comfort, most of us are going to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
But
which is another point of Count It All Joy, because when you do have those obstacles, even in harsh parenting or bullying or whatever they are, it does shape you, and you can freaking most of the time accomplish way more when you've been through that and you learn how much of a hero you are in your own life and how strong you really can be. If you've never had to use your muscles whatsoever, you don't even know that they exist. So,
well, and that's the other thing I was going to say, actually, was that, the other thing you mentioned during our KFM meeting was that some of it was positive. Some of it was Joe Jr. was doing things that Jack may never have even thought to do. And he's like, dude, that is awesome. That looks, first of all, fun.
Yes.
Because I'm an Enneagram 7.
100%.
But also, like, I never knew I could freaking even do that. I want to do it too. And
yes,
just showing people potential and things that are possible and just, like, opportunities, that also, no one was showing Kick what she could be or what she could do.
She didn't have an older sister that was going out and taking all these opportunities, and Joe Jr. was so into like self-improvement and growth, and he wanted to be smart and he wanted to be fit and he wanted
so all you know of the that Jack had FOMO.
So Jack for sure was like, well, maybe I'll like that. Well, maybe I would be really good at that. Seeing all of the opportunities to go out and try new things, and his Enneagram 7 was freaking grabbing every opportunity that was there.
Yeah.
And if he would have been the oldest, he probably would have gone on a lot more of like just fun and empty sorts of adventures. And yeah,
poor Kick, dude. She was an Enneagram 7 as well, but had no North Star, had no anchor, so or compass.
Had no one to compete against.
So it was like she
was aimless.
Was left to float.
Her own devices and her own indecision. And yeah, in a way, Joe Jr. did make those decisions for Jack all the way up until Jack's death. He was doing what Joe Jr. had set out for him his whole life.
Absolutely. And it is this way. I know it sounds like we're making like excuses for Kick or acting like because she's a girl, she had to have like a woman model. But for the freaking 1930s, 20s, 40s. It was different for Kennedy women versus Kennedy men. She did have
different expectations, different opportunities,
different limitations.
She was in an all girls Catholic school. She was not in a boarding school where they were teaching you
and
they could be the president.
Yes. And the human mind does believe what people tell them and puts limitations and glass ceilings on themselves whenever that's all you've ever heard.
The 4 minute mile.
Yes.
Yeah. That whole story. You literally, if you're told that you can't do it,
most people will just say, okay.
Yeah, they'll accept it. It's impossible. Why even try? Okay, Cassie's going to Google for us the 4 minute mile. It was basically accepted as completely impossible, like humanly, physically impossible mm-hmm. to run a 4 minute mile. We just, as a species, could not go that fast until someone.
Because no one had ever done it.
Because no one had
so ever it done must it. Be a rule. So it must be impossible.
Yep.
Until 1954, Roger Bannister, at the age of 25 years old, broke the 4 minute barrier. A human did it.
Broke people's freaking minds.
And now 1,664 people have done it because one person did it.
And so now they're like, maybe I should actually shoot for that.
Yeah. I think it was like within a couple of years, like 20 people had done it just right after him.
And before that, as long as recorded history, there was zero people that had done it. And that, my friends, is why mindset is everything.
It's a freaking big deal.
Perspective also is what determined how successful and the path that Jack was going to go down. Mm-hmm. His perspective on what happened to his family. He could have easily gone MIA and gone freaking Great Gatsby. He could have been a martyr and been like, poor me. The stars just didn't align. The one that our hopes and dreams were hung on is gone. My life plan is gone.
Yeah.
What was me? And he didn't.
He didn't just absolutely conquer America because he decided to one day, but he decided to every day and it led him there.
And that also is a good point because you can use your identity and sort of tell yourself who you are and who you believe you are and who you're going to be by faking it until you make it, by mm-hmm. setting yourself up for small wins and small failures where you can learn these lessons and build upon them in little ways where it's not so traumatizing.
He
did help himself in a lot of ways to fake it till he makes it because he wasn't the most confident and he wasn't the most outgoing.
Absolutely.
But he did self-tan and mm-hmm. he
built his confidence. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, he worked hard at it and he was so intentional about it for so many years. And looking, I think a lot of times we look at these little decisions and we don't think it matters that much.
Mm-hmm.
But it all is a narrative of who am I? What do I believe I can do? Am I someone who gives up easily?
Right. And I think that he lived like that because of the loss of Joe Jr., the loss of Kick. When Kick died, he said, all I'm trying to do is live every freaking day like it is my last. That's what you're supposed to do. And I'm going to freaking get every experience, every opportunity, and every ounce of fun that I am allowed. That daily perspective is what added up over time.
Yeah. He really did just do what he needed to in order to get to where he wanted to go, kind mm-hmm. of. Like, he had that goal, I think, in the back of his mind the whole time. Even though he didn't say it out loud or like commit to it until last minute.
Yeah.
And I think
that's another lesson. You don't have to always tell people your most precious innermost thoughts and dreams. Yeah. Don't put yourself out there to be vulnerable when it's really not necessary. And when you need to protect your energy, your confidence, your hope.
Yeah. He was.
Don't let people discourage you when it's not warranted.
I think he was so strategic with protecting his mindset and how he viewed himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he did tell himself who he was day after day. He wasn't proving himself to other people primarily, I think. I think it was mostly to prove himself to himself of what he could do, what he could accomplish. And that was fun. And that gave him energy as well. His perspective was that it was a freaking fight to the finish and it was a climb and he was going to be the last man standing.
And I think that stuff gets easier because he built momentum
mm-hmm.
and taught himself what it feels like to break through, you know? Mm-hmm.
And I think that is so cool and so worthwhile. He obviously also had some toxic traits in there and
which
toxic
we
ways
will
of doing this. Because I think a lot of the affairs were a part of the same plan, the mm-hmm. same strategic.
Yeah, it was.
What can I do in my personal life to give me confidence, even if it's like false egotistical confidence?
Or what fun can I have today? If it's my last yep. day on earth, let's go.
To make the boring business parts
tolerable,
palatable, but I digress. We will
get there.
Yeah, Cassie said we will talk about that. There are tons of controversy, tons of juicy details to be had. Things that I don't think anyone, unless I've you are
never,
a deep, 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 yeah. I mean, you've read every Kennedy book out there. I don't think that, I know for sure most people don't know these stories.
Yep.
So I'm so excited to get into them. They are fascinating.
Also talk about the person who had to take the brunt of a lot of those situations, Miss Jackie. Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis is coming right up. The other thing that we have to discuss is an invention from Bethany's brain, a discovery of Kennedy glasses. We just realized that the Kennedys going into Act Two and like ushering in a new era has literally affected our lives and ushered us into a new era. We've got new hair. We literally overhauled our entire Patreon. So if you want to see like behind the scenes business stuff, us like just going throughout our week, tackling things that we want to do, go visit Patreon because we have like a whole new category of content so that fun.
We
so enjoy.
Yeah, we are loving it so much. Like I am having so much fun watching the videos that I'm posting and editing them. Anyway, so.
Well, we've also gotten back on Pinterest and we're pinning all of our old favorite style and outfits and all that.
Going
there again.
High school, college, Cassie and Bethany.
We Although have Cassie literally ushered in a new era.
You have to help me convince Cassie to go back to her high school OG era hair because she used to have, it was like her natural brown, but then a massive chunk, like a massive strip on the side of her head was blonde and I loved it. And Cassie's like, it's just not calling to me. But I
was about to do it. And then I looked at a photo and I was like,
I'm so obsessed. I love it.
We'll see.
But my dad thinks it looks like
Bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah, my dad thinks it looks like the monsters and is not here for it. Hates it.
But everyone else loves it. I loved it at the time. I don't know if I want to do it again, but I did lighten my hair and
cut it.
Cut it, thinned it. Oh my freaking gosh. I cut off like half my hair and it still looks like I need to thin it.
It's ridiculous. It's so annoying.
Okay, we're not putting that in. We just got into like a, okay, we're building blood and business, like rut and COVID.
Not a rut, like hustling hard.
Yeah, but I meant with style. Like a lot of my personality, I'm an Enneagram 4, so a lot of my personality is aesthetics and like dreamery, yeah. like inspiration. And I love to be excited about life. I love to have a cute coffee cup.
And like so nostalgic. And I feel like that takes so much time.
And self-expression as well.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously 4s are like all identity and all that. But I didn't have time for that. And so I just stopped doing that. And I was just dressing like
sister was
fine, but
cracking the whip.
The running joke in my family is if we ever have a day off, that Bethany allowed me to have the day off because.
Yeah. And I tried to pull that freaking, I tried to reverse it. And Audrey was like, yeah, right. Dude, were you there?
Yeah.
So annoying.
We were in the middle of Joanne's because we were making our
concert costumes because that's what we do every year.
Because it makes our Taylor Swift concert billions times better. We did not do it for the 1989 concert and it was the worst mistake.
Unicorn onesies.
Because we panicked the day of. We were like in a different state, not at home, and we didn't have costumes to wear. We always dress up like her albums or one
Why
of her looks or whatever.
Why go to a concert if you're not going to wear a costume?
Yeah, it's like you just feel like a freaking bummer normal person and you're like, why am I here?
You're standing in jeans and a t-shirt screaming songs? No.
Absolutely not.
You need to be in head-to-toe glitter screaming songs. Okay?
Exactly.
For the Red Tour, we made our own shirts, full outfits, like did.
Yeah, we did the whole shebang, Trouble so fun. Music video, like the white shirt with the big black dot on it. And then
22, not a lot going on at the moment. That's 22, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Anyways,
it was
and
a
that's
vibe.
A gnarly story. And I will link that video Instagram stories.
We have an OG vlog full on from, 2013?
I have no freaking idea.
Yeah. It's fully edited. But I was still in high
school for sure.
Edited by Cassie. And then that was the only video I ever edited for our quote unquote YouTube channel, which then after that first video became Bethany's YouTube channel
for the next decade.
Hey, we're finally back to making content together.
So we're in the middle of Joanne's and we're picking out our outfits.
Mm-hmm.
And Audrey, our little sister, is freaking out. When are we going to freaking have the time to freaking make these whole costumes? I work every freaking day.
Blah, yeah, blah, blah. That was on Monday. Concert's on Friday.
Oh, yeah. And we have a vlog of us going to Joanne's, by the way, a lifestyle video that we're going to put on, or that we put on Patreon if you want to watch that. That day, I said, oh, Cassie gave me Friday off, so we can just make them on Friday.
And Audrey didn't miss a beat.
Cassie gave you the day off. You mean you gave her the day off? So annoying. Just the absolute workaholic of the family. But
that's why people think that you're
working on it, but I'm not.
No, you are. But like, only to the point that you want to.
Sundays, that's a freaking big thing for me. I have Sundays completely off.
Yeah. And that's amazing. I love that.
Yeah,
I
think it's a big deal. Listen,
yes, it is.
If 6 days of work, one day off is good enough for freaking Bible times.
For God.
It's good enough for me.
Well, people always say that you're like super type A and super organized, you know, the person with the planner. And you do use your planner, but you're such a creative that it overrides the like type A in you. Mm-hmm. And
I also think like, it's because I probably just learned to work with the people around me.
Oh,
and
I had to still
conform to my family, which are all fours. So zero planning, no, okay, zero detail oriented.
No, I don't buy this because you have been creative your entire life. Bethany's the kid
more organized, though, a little bit. Yeah. I used to plan out my outfits like crazy.
To the point that she taped like 8 pieces of paper together.
Printer paper.
And then laid out on the ground.
Made my mom sketch my body. Cut it out so that I could dress my freaking paper doll.
And did not leave it white.
She drew her face and her hair on. I'm gonna do my best. Why did mom not keep that? She should have kept
it. She definitely should have kept it. There was fingernail polish and rings and a bracelet on this paper.
Our family is anti-hoarding. No. Our family gets rid of everything.
I literally ask mom all the time, hey, where's this? And she just looked at me with like a scared face. Like, gave that away.
Yeah, from dust to dust, whatever. It's fine.
Oh my gosh. But literally, we've got to put a picture of that paper doll on Instagram or on Patreon or something because oh, it was so good. Ridiculous. Anyways, that's the kind of organized Bethany is, only for creative endeavors. That's what I'm saying. It's always for your outfits or
motivated
YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
it's a nice thought, being organized.
It is. Nice.
And then when you try, you have crap content. Freaking KFM10.
KFM10. Oh my gosh. We'll go down in history. Anyways, Jack and Eunice would be so proud of us with their rotting banana peels on the mantle.
I just love this Kennedy season so much because I feel like it's the behind the scenes, like Cassie says in the outro, that you hear every week, the intimate
moments, yeah,
moments behind closed doors that very few people have gotten an inside look mm-hmm. into, that we are getting to really dissect and look at
and try to understand.
It is the gray area and the complexities that make life meaningful, and all of the decisions and the things that people don't highlight when they're talking about any celebrity, whether it be good or bad. It's always the highlights of them on top of the world, or the skeletons in their closet, the worst things ever.
Yep.
And it's never the mundane areas where me and Cassie which is love. What we're like, who are these people?
Because yes, that's exactly it. That is the stuff that makes someone who they actually are.
Yes, their daily decisions, their lifestyles. We want to know everyone's morning routine. Like these
tell
people
me,
who are.
What do you
aliens,
do to hype yourself up?
Yeah, these people who just.
Yeah, how do you freaking do all
feats?
Of that?
What is that?
Yeah,
what is your personality? What's your secret sauce? It is truly in the mundane, and it's so freaking fascinating.
Join us here next time to hear all about how Jack becomes JFK and an all too familiar character, Jackie Bouvier, enters the story.
Thank you all for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed it, please give us a review on Apple, rate us on Spotify, and share Blood and Business with a friend or a sibling. If you'd like to support the show, the best way is to become a patron of Blood and Business. You will get bonus content every month, including a monthly bonus episode, interactive main episodes, and behind-the-scenes footage.
To keep up with us day-to-day, you can follow us at Blood and Business on Instagram and TikTok. You can find the link for Instagram, TikTok, and Patreon in the show notes below. Thank you so much for the support, and we will see you back here next week for your regularly scheduled programming on
Blood and Business.